live in a constant state of fear and misery. All right, what's up, punks? It's Shinobi. We're bringing you a special edition of Block Digest today with Rodolfo Novak from CoinKite. So, he can say hi in a second, but sadly, it's just me and Nopara today because everybody's schedule is all wonky. So, what's going on, Rodolfo?
Hello. I'm using Push to Talk on this awful interface application that you forced us to use. But hello. Nice to be here.
Yeah, I still have to make up my mind whether to use that recording I made of all the desks and stuff getting knocked around as a funny intro. We'll see. But what's up, Nopara?
You know, you can get used to the Mamba. Shinobi forced me to use the Mamba too, but he forced me to use QuetCard too. So I mean, so we are even.
See, my fascism has benefits.
Has a similar user interface.
Well, I mean, Mumble is more like the first version of cold card buttons.
Oh man, yeah. It's let's not shit talk version one. Version one always has issues.
Okay. Just one more question. I was just over a dev meeting, and one of my David is going to go through some borders and taking some quote cards, and he's asking if it's safe to travel with the quote cards because they kind of look like a bomb.
I mean, I don't know. It doesn't look like a bomb at all. It looks like a calculator. I mean, there isn't even enough room in there for explosive material. So, I mean, I wouldn't be concerned. I've traveled with, like, piles of them, like, pretty much like all major airports. It's never good to travel with your private keys anyways. I mean, but aside from that, he could destroy the seed and then just put the seed back when he arrives new place. That's the only suggestion I'd give.
Yeah, we just want to give some quote cards to another Wasabi developer. That's why.
I think you'll be fine. I got stopped because my phone charger looked like a fucking bomb, air quote, when I came back from Berlin last year.
Yeah, don't worry about it. You can travel with it.
Yeah, that's what I taught him too.
Alrighty, so I guess the first thing I kind of wanted to dive into is the overall like cold card design, and because I think the most important thing that you do in this architecture is just kind of how you structure the interactions between the secure elements and the vanilla MCU. So I mean, just for people not already familiar with that, you want to kind of like break down the basics of that?
Yeah, so We sort of went with this idea of using a very dumb secure element, right? So that you can't put a lot of stuff in it and sort of do malicious things in it. That secure element really can only do storage, one-way counting, and it's got HMAC and a few other little sort of crypto accelerators in there. But none of those are used for Bitcoin because the crypto accelerators in pretty much every micro is closed source. So we don't want to do closed source Bitcoin because that's stupid. So what we do is we have the whole firmware that runs on the SE, on the secure element, open source. And then we do all the Bitcoin operations on the open MCU with open crypto libraries, so that essentially you could just sort of compile yourself, run it yourself, and then you don't have to trust us whatsoever on how this thing is running. But I think there's a big misconception out there that there is open source chips and non and closed source chips. No, pretty much aside from hobby projects, all micros are closed source, all of them. The difference is some of them will publish more detail schematics of how they work, and some will publish less, but they're all closed. And unless you have, and even for the ones that publish the whole, every single gate on a spreadsheet, unless you have an electron microscope, you can't really verify there. So assume that, you know, those chips, you know, could be doing something nefarious. So what you do is you run your own open source stuff on them to essentially make sure that they're doing what you want them to do.
Yeah, I've always kind of thought like it was silly to make the argument that the chip is open source. You know, not to knock on like any specific company on the space, but it's just like that, like who out there in normie world can verify that this chip in this device is actually what it claims to be? Like, I can't do that, and I think I have a pretty good grasp on shit.
It's sort of marketing bullshit, right? Started by one of the biggest hardware wallet makers that, you know, they use open source chips. No, their chip is not open source. The schematics are sort of, you know, out there, but the chip itself is not open source. You're just running open source firmware inside that chip. That's the reality of this. The manufacturer is not going to give you an X-ray of their die for every single chip for you to verify.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry for not understanding the historical context, but so what you hear here and there is that some people say Ledger is not open source. And when you read the first, let's say, Reddit comment there, then it's going to say some parts of Ledger is not open source, the secure element. Could you explain this? What's really going on here? Because I have some confusion.
Yeah, so, no, so it is pretty confusing. So Trezor has open source firmware, right, that they load onto their micros, but it does not have a secure element. Okay, so, and then Ledger actually is fully closed source. They have
the firmware.
Yes, everything is closed source on Ledger. The difference is, so Ledger pays to get certified, right? So when you have a secure element, some secure element manufacturers will not let you open source your firmware as part of the contract you signed to use those chips, right? So they made an architectural choice to use a secure element that won't let you open source, right? So their firmware is fully closed. What they do is they get a sort of third party to audit their code and certify it, right? But then you're trusting essentially them, right? To me, that's a no-go. You know, this is a personal preference thing, right? But the Ledger guys do have like high quality sort of like people there working on their stuff. It's not like, you know, it's like some sort of teenagers just hacking some stuff together. Like they're pros. But it is fully closed and you have to trust them. Now on the Trezor side, it is open, but they don't have a secure element, so essentially Trezor has no security. It's essentially impossible to secure a non-secure element. That's why they keep on getting ROM dumped and all that stuff keeps on happening to them. That architecture, in my opinion, sort of has really very little hope in terms of physical security. So what we did was we sort of went in the middle. We found a secure element that we can open source the firmware, and we have a open MCU that has, you know, the right amount of memory and processing power to sort of do all the operations. So it is possible to make a hardware wallet that has a secure element, so it's actually secure, and is fully open source.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of what, you know, personally drew me to the cold card in the beginning. But, you know, you mentioned, you know, the Trezor vulnerabilities as far as, the ROM dumps and the long history of attacks, and like that kind of comes down to like physical security. And my issue with like their whole strategy on things is, in my opinion, in the long term, all that matters is physical security. Like in my mind, the idea that you're just protecting keys from remote attacks, like that's done, that's solved, like that's not a problem anymore. The real problem in the long term is people coming after you physically. So like what have you guys done in the cold card to really kind of protect against those attacks? Like I know you've iterated a few times on that since version one.
Yeah, so version 1 and version 2 of Cold Card. So version 1 of Cold Card is sort of not as, definitely not as secure as version 3. It is fairly secure. It is, but it still doesn't have, like, I wouldn't consider it fully physically secure. It is much more secure than, say, a Trezor, right? But it's not like to the spec that we want it. Mostly because when we started that project, the secure element that we wanted was not sort of fully available in the way that we needed it. So with Mark III version, it is physically secure because we are able to do the things we need to do to keep it physically secure inside the secure element, right? So, and also, even if the secure element gets compromised, we use one-time pad to store your secret inside the secure element. So good luck with that. Now, there is more to just somebody physically attacking the device by trying to peel it or sort of like ROM dump it, right? Other things that a secure element provides you with are, one is a monotonic counter, right? So you can really guarantee the device will break itself if the amount of pin attempts crosses a threshold, right? You can guarantee that because that calculation is done inside the secure element. And then you get, for example, side channel attack defenses, right? Remember way back in the day, I can't remember, I think it might have been Trezor that they were leaking private key calculations through the power supply, right? So, you are vulnerable to that kind of stuff. And they patched it and it was improved. But the problem is, if you're not using secure element, it is hopeless. Right, there's always going to be another way that somebody's going to find to sort of get the stuff out because those chips were not designed to hold secrets. So you need a secure element. And that's why the Ledger, even though it's closed source, and unfortunately you can't trust because it's closed source, does have protections against those hacks. Listen, every single wallet is vulnerable. Eventually bugs are found and they will be fixed. But if you start with a much stronger foundation of a secure element, it gives you a lot more sort of out like baked in defenses against a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean like the first just pick on you a little bit, like the only vulnerability I've seen for the cold card so far was the version one where I think it was Lazy Ninja dropped the trace in between the MCU and the secure element and was able to kind of bypass the rate limiter for the pin. And even then, if you followed the recommendation with the pin length, that would still take, what was it, like a month or two to brute force? So actually give you some time to notice it's missing and actually move your money.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was good enough, and that's why we simply, improved the design of the PCB to make it incredibly harder to do that on the second version. And then we added epoxy on top of the secure element. But again, we don't believe in just, creating some marketing around that and sort of like, oh, look, it's finally improved. No, we just, you know what? That much better to improve the security by changing the secure element to an even better one so that we can do the pin calculation of trials inside the secure element with the monotonic counter. So then there is no, that attack is simply not possible anymore. Unless somebody find a vulnerability on the actual secure element, good luck with that.
I just wanted to point out that like the one vulnerability that's hit you guys so far was nowhere near as bad as some of the other ones on other products.
It's because we get, you know, we use a secure element to do the secure element's job, which is to hold a secret, right? So I think you're going to find, you know, people are always going to find vulnerabilities on Cold Card. You know, it's normal. That's how you improve a product, especially for security. But I think it's going to be a lot harder to find catastrophic vulnerabilities on a device that uses a secure element and has the firmware open source. So, you know, we are in contact with a lot of security researchers. There's a lot of people trying to break Cold Card now for, I don't know, 2 years now. I forgot how long it's been around. Maybe a year and a half, 2 years, right?
Sounds right.
It doesn't matter. It's been around. People are trying to break it, and so far, it's been holding its own. And I think another fundamental difference is we don't believe a hardware wallet should ever be connected to a computer if you don't want it to, right? So being truly air-gapped also really diminishes the attack surface for remote exploits, right? Because let's say that there is a flaw in the device and then the attacker manages to sort of, you know, take over your computer to exploit that via the USB, right? If you're not connected via the USB, then you're truly air-gapped, and that remote retrieval of the exploit would be substantially harder. Essentially, what true air-gapping does is you'd have to be physically attacked in order for that exploit to be exploited, right? I've heard a few sort of, you know, other hardware wallet makers sort of say that USB is air gapped, and you know, it's not. that's cute, but you know, air gapping means there is literally just air around it.
that to me, it just, like, I don't think they're really thinking through what they're saying when I hear those things, you know, because it's like I've seen the same kind of statements where because you're using the SD card, it's not an air gap. And like, I don't think they appreciate the difference in a fully open, like effectively bandwidth, not constrained connection over a USB cable versus that SD card where you can only like get so much into the actual memory on that device to try to run an exploit. And like, it is so much more constrained in what you have to work with there.
Yeah, so you gain two things, right? One is that it's not remotely retrievable, right? Or remotely attackable because it's not connected to anything. Another thing is you cannot do side channel attacks as easy, right? Like that Trezor attack through the via power supply, right? Because it's not connected to the computer. So if you were using a altered USB hub that could read the power levels on the device in a more advanced way, it's not super easy, but you know, you could do it that. Now, if you're using a dumb power pack, right, with the device, it's much harder to do any side channel attacks unless you're very close. Now, the microSD, though, this is not like microSD is like a computer. Right. This is a very restrained small library. The microSD driver is only 252 lines of code. That's it. So you could inspect that yourself. Also, we don't really execute anything from the microSD card. Right. We're just reading very specific data that we expect to read. So it's not like putting a USB drive inside a computer, right? The USB stack is a monumental disaster on a computer. That's why there are so many attacks that you can do to it. So that's sort of where it's at in terms of that part of the security architecture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you pretty much preemptively just removed as much attack surface as possible. It just like not even wait until it's an issue or a problem. It's just like, no, let's just make this not possible now.
Yeah, because it will be an issue eventually, right? I mean, you have to assume that an attacker somewhere, especially when not interested in doing responsible disclosure, right? We'll try to exploit this. So why get people that, you know, it's trying to hold their savings on the device to expose themselves anyways, right? So let's just cut that thing completely. But, you know, if you want to use your card for, say, you know, your warm wallet or whatever, you know, by all means, use the USB. Works just like Trezor and Ledger with, you know, Electrum or, you know, Core or whatever.
Mm-hmm. But if you want that extra, you know, protection layer for your cold storage, it's like, you know, I have literally never plugged mine into a computer and I'm never going to. And I just love that.
I mean, it's pretty cool, right? Because you can have, say, the device, you know, stored someplace remote that doesn't even have internet or anything. You can just bring your microSD card, right, with you with the PSBT in it, go there, sign it, right, completely offline, completely remote, and then come back to the place to broadcast a transaction, right? So, like, you can really put some distance in between things.
Mm-hmm. So, no part. Do you have any questions you want to ask before I kind of shift gears a little bit?
Yes, I want to ask one question. That's, so now you feel pretty confident about the security of Quad Card MK3. And what's the future direction? Are you putting Quad Cards into laptops and mobile phones?
So I think I'm pretty comfortable with the security. In terms of, yeah, you know, I think we've reached a level of security now that it's a good place to sort of remain for a while and see what the security researchers and everybody else sort of comes up with. There is always more stuff to add. So, for example, we want to start logging every single interaction that the device makes inside itself, encrypted. So if there is ever an event, an attack or something, at least we could review all that. That'll be pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah. So then there's a bunch of stuff. I mean, like, you know, for example, the address explorer that HoloWave actually took on himself. So we didn't have to make it. That was great. So for example, CodeCard is the only hardware wallet that you can actually review the addresses in the device, as opposed to trusting the computer or just the address on the screen. You can actually explore, transverse the whole derivation path. It's really sort of, we're going to keep on adding features that are useful in terms of security and sort of usability, as opposed to stuff that sort of like is great for marketing. I think next we're adding a Shamir shares. I unlikely to be slip 39. It's too memory intensive and got other issues that essentially not our preference. So we're gonna just do our own thing. I want to make the OpenDime have a different mode so that you can run it as a HSM and cosine transactions, so you can have a secondary or third sort of thing that essentially just leave that connected and it just sign or cosine transactions based on a policy inside the device. So you can say just one Bitcoin every Tuesday, right? And the device will be connected to a computer, and you know that's not for your HODL, right? Like that's either to cosine your HODL or to just sign, say for example, join markets, right? I really dislike using all the CoinJoin applications because the keys need to be, you know, hot. So we're looking into how can we make a cold card have a separate firmware or different whatever, how we can do so people don't mix up their stuff, so that you can run that cold card connected to a computer and cosign or sign stuff. There's a lot of useful stuff in that. What else? There is, you know, we eventually want to sort of work on the industrial design a bit more, you know, improve it, sort of take it to the next level kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, we're gonna keep on adding stuff. You know, people keep on buying, we keep on making it. That's the mentality.
Dude,
Sounds
I
good.
love the coin join firmware idea, but I want like go back to the event log on the device. Like that would be amazing for any kind of
Sorry, I missed
corporate.
that. What would you like?
The event logging, like that would be amazing for any kind of corporate or institutional use. Because like now you don't just have the blockchain history of stuff going on. You actually have the history of signing of your key device to audit as well. So you can take like a auditing to an event to a whole new level. Like it's not just, oh, those coins moved. It's like, where did that get signed? Like what point in the key management process were we compromised?
Yeah, no, that's the idea, right? It's like really, I mean, we're sort of working on security tools for need as opposed to want, right? So people want many things, because they're cool. We want to get there too, but we sort of really focus on we really focus on trying to make the stuff that people or we really actually need. So yeah.
Yeah, it's we can get into all the features I want that you won't give me towards the end.
Yeah, I mean, everybody wants features, right? But it's memory is limited, security is a concern. So you have to be very, very conservative on how you build features for a hardware wallet, because anything you do is one more opening, right? That's why, for example, no shitcoins, right? That's just more code to be reviewed. And doesn't matter how much people try to justify that as like, oh, but we can sort of keep this in a separate branch or whatever. And you're still putting resources on it, right? It's still getting reviewed. It's still more stuff to write and read and test. So things get lost. It's just the nature of software, right?
Yeah, I would much rather you guys keep your work concentrated on Bitcoin. Alrighty, so yeah, I think I want to shift gears here a little bit and talk about supply chains, because this is something I think that like the vast majority of people in this space like don't really understand how big of an issue this is going to be in the long term. I mean, like if you just look back to just 2017, like the amount of nonsense all over places like Amazon is insane. Like I literally saw people just selling USB sticks advertised as Bitcoin hardware wallets. And so like when we like really blow up in terms of like all the normies are rushing in, like those supply chain issues that aren't really so bad now because it's just us fucking goofs and weirdos here, like those are going to become massive because like the supply chain is going to expand enormously. And like that's an issue that's going to affect everybody. Like what happens when there's literally a million people storming into Bitcoin every day looking for a way to store their keys, and these supply chains for all these wallets are just wide open attack vectors.
So I think a huge problem is most of the hardware wallet makers sort of went with a reseller model, and they sort of depend on that. And that's why you see so much shilling, right, for those wallets on Twitter or whatever, right? Because people make, good margin on those wallets, selling them, reselling them locally. And it kind of makes sense, especially with shipping costs and all that stuff. Even though we do have people who buy and resell it, we don't actually believe in official resellers. I don't want to vouch for any reseller. I'm happy if they want to resell, and then the people who buy from them have local trust webs, right? So if your local sort of Bitcoiner guy in your city, and you trust him to buy your hardware wallet from him, well, by all means, right? That's actually not a bad thing. But I'm not going to put an official reseller list on my website because, you know, those could be nefarious. They could turn nefarious or they could be accidentally nefarious, right? So that's one thing. Another thing is, you know, if you're interested in saving, you know, 10, 15% by buying on Amazon a 100 something dollar device, you know what? Like, good luck to you. You do not understand the concept of being your own bank. The responsibility that comes with that, you know, saving a few bucks to store thousands, hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin is insane. So, you know, you should not care about spending, you know, a decent, you know, like amount of money researching and sort of securing yourself. Think of it kind of like, you know, it's like buying a $10,000 bicycle, you know, and putting a $10 lock on it. It's ridiculous, right? So you have to secure yourself appropriately. And another thing too is, you know, so you cannot control supply chain of MCUs, really. You have to have a secure element because secure elements are all like individually identified, and they can keep that very securely, as opposed to a general purpose MCU like one of the open wallets. And then, you know, they have to be manufactured in a country where, you know, we have laws and we have sort of reasonable security and peace and not a history of making fake stuff. So, you know, we make cold cards here in Toronto, 40 minutes from my house, and the secure elements are get shipped here from the factory, and then we put everything together here and they get programmed. And then there is the shipping part of it, right? So, you know, putting a holographic sticker on a device and calling it a day is absurd because those are too easy to forge, and you know, you can just buy, you know, a bunch on eBay. And they don't even have to look the same because people don't know the difference. So, you know, we don't have a perfect solution for that either, but we do have a what I believe to be a better solution. We use money bags. These are used for banks when they have to deposit cash at the back office. So, you know, these are void evident bags, and they also have a serial number on them, and then the serial number is burned into the secure element so that you can't really. You know, it's just keep on adding more stuff, right? Security in that. So the idea is you just keep on making it more expensive for the attacker to try to get in between you and the user. Yeah, and I guess another issue too is the activation of the device really is kind of like part of the supply chain. So there are hardware wallets out there that need you to connect it to a computer in order to activate it, right? And need to sort of connect to their servers. That's also pretty absurd because now you're leaking your unique identifier to that web service. And yay, now, even if they're not nefarious, somebody in the network now knows which wallet is yours, which hardware is yours. So that really goes into that idea of not ever connecting the wallet into a computer. That helps with many things.
I mean, yeah. And so, you know, like I think you really hit the nail on the head, except for the last mile to the customer is really the only you know, place I think I disagree with you there. It's, you know, I think like really like the bag kind of structure you do, I think like ultimately like that's going to be need to wrapped again in that kind of protection just to get from like the actual supplier you to like another reseller. And like I think pretty much the supply chain from the manufacturer to the actual end distributors needs to work like moving cash between banks. Like
Yeah,
that's the degree.
but that's why, you know, I don't like the idea of resellers. Just, you know, it's in terms of official resellers. It's just, you know, we ship directly to customers from Canada. It's
Yeah,
as simple as that.
Like, I'm not saying like official or anything. I'm just mean like in general, like whether you're just a reseller doing it themselves or it's an officially notarized one, like that's the degree that you're gonna have to secure that supply coming from the manufacturer to you.
Yeah,
And like,
that's how it's done. So the devices don't leave the factory unless they are in this void bags. These are void evident bags.
no, but I mean, like, let's take that to a new level, and a whole batch of cards gets wrapped in the same type of protection, so
Yeah.
that batch is identified as well. Like, you know what I mean?
I think the issue is that you can't really fully trust the bags either. Unless the person receiving it knows exactly what to look for, every single step is sort of like has flaws. I think we have an idea for the next hardware that we're sort of playing with, and if that works out, it could get extra interesting. But this is sort of like there's never gonna be a perfect or ultimate solution. It's always going to be sort of like a rat race, right? And then there is cost, right? So to still keep the device in a certain cost, I mean, I can't, contact one of these sort of companies that make the ultimate secure sort of boxes for you to ship a military, nuclear missile. Sort of like the launch code chips, you know what I mean? Like you can't charge a customer, $2,000, $5,000 for the bag. So,
Well, I mean, at this scale, but I mean, imagine if you are getting like tens or hundreds of thousands of new orders a day in 10 years. You know what I mean?
I think we're gonna sort of work this out as the scales increase, and we're gonna keep on sort of like doing what makes sense for that skill. I think I'm pretty happy with like the current setup that we have for say that the next 10x for Bitcoin price and interest. And then sort of like in between now and then we're sort of gonna keep on working on what's the next level security we can go at that is like marketable price-wise.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that, man, because it's like every time I talk about this at scale, it's like everybody's like, I haven't thought of this, or why is that a problem? And it's just like that is such an obvious potential clusterfuck just flying at us down the road. Like, if this does succeed, which we all think it will, like, this is going to be a major problem.
Yeah, I mean, what's really cool though is with scale comes so many options, right? Because say, Bitcoin market grows another 100x in terms of people, and say we're doing well in sales, we could get to a point where it can just go and, we'll make our custom chips. You know what I mean? We can start getting to a degree of customizability because of the scale that you would make it really hard for somebody to sort of, get around that, or at least get around that and not be evident. See, that's like a very important part is like, how can you make it evident that something was messed with? You don't necessarily need to protect it to that degree. You just have to make it evident.
Yeah, it's nothing can be perfect. You just want somebody to know, like, okay, don't put my keys in here.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess no para. You got one more question?
Yes, I have one more question. So you live in Australia, yes?
No, Canada.
Oh, sorry, Canada. Okay. So that's your home base. So you have a home there, right? Like you're not really moving around.
No, I live in the ether. No, I'm kidding. Yes, I have a home in Canada.
So, if you would be a digital nomad, a crypto nomad, meaning you wouldn't have a base, you would be going from country to country, how would you store your bitcoins?
I think traveling with bitcoins, it's gonna have to rely on passphrases or empty devices, and you're going to have to bring it in your mind or concealed into, I don't know, like, I mean, you know, you could put a micro SD card with your seeds encrypted in it and then put a bunch of pictures and leave it in your camera. It's like, you know, it's very unlikely somebody's ever going to check that crossing an airport. And if they do, you know, you could put the keys stenography into pictures that inside a micro SD card, and then you just carry an empty cold card, or you buy a cold card and you send it to the destination you're going to. You know, being a nomad and crossing unfriendly borders is never going to be an easy thing, and you're going to have to sort of play to whatever degree of interest they have in you. But I think, you know, like, another thing you can also do that I think it's going to help a lot is, you know, once we have, say, co-signing, self-rolled out co-signing services, right? So you're not really losing any privacy. You're using your own co-sign box in a different country, right? So you can do multi-sig. So even if they do get you, you know, like, you can't really sign your coins, right? You could also do that. I think different solutions for different people. These things are never sort of like an easy answer.
Yeah, thank you. It wasn't an easy question. That's why I asked you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one. Almost like an idea for a new mnemonic scheme somebody had might help with that.
Nope.
Oh, we're going to have to fight now. All right. So I think we're at that trolley point now, Rodolfo, where I'm going to have to bother you about all the features I want that you won't give me.
We take PRs.
but oh, yes. Okay. Why don't you have your issues open on GitHub?
Because I'm fucking lazy.
No, because, oh my god, it's like we used to get a lot of, like, issues that are non-issues, right? Like, I think a lot of people earnestly want to help, or people want to sort of ask questions or participate, which is great, right? The problem is GitHub itself has very bad maintainer tools for issues. Right, so we don't want to put actual usable time into managing issues, right? They're very non-helpful. So we find that, like, having people actually put in the time to write exactly what they want or need or willing to do into an email, send it to us, you know what I mean, sort of like really gets a lot more quality and usable feedback. I really wish we could open the issues, but it's been not great. I mean, we even got, like, somebody opened a PR to ask a question. You know, again, it's maybe it's like we failed to make it easy for people to find the email to send a message, but maybe we can improve that. But so far, unless GitHub gives me a way of deciding if an issue gets open or not open, right? So there is, like, sort of like a purgatory, a limbo for issues that are not made by us. I probably won't open issues. I think other projects also have a lot more people contributing. So maybe they, you know, they do need it. We do have internal issues in a separate repo. That's for us to sort of, you know, uncensoredly say the things we want to say, how we want to say it internally is also great. I don't want to have to sort of think about how I'm going to describe things or sort of use the kind of politeness that you need in an open issue system as well. We're trying to be productive. And all the people contributing to ColdCard, Coldbase-wise, know that can reach us very easily. And we sort of do, you know, we respond to email in, like, minutes.
Rodolfo, You can just admit it, dude. It's okay. You're just scared that if you open it, you'll get 100 alerts from me a day and you'll never sleep again.
Not really, because I just block you.
I mean, I can very much relate to the issue that you just said, because in Wasabi, I was considering maybe we should hire someone whose only job is to say no in a very polite way, and that would be all he's doing. I don't know. That might be something to consider.
I think you know, it's like a blessing and a curse. Like, Bitcoin has introduced like cold and like GitHub to like a lot of people who are not necessarily technical, which is kind of fantastic, right? But that means also a lot of people that are not necessarily going to contribute have GitHub accounts, and they will sort of like put in a lot of effort into sort of participating. But a lot of times, like, participation is not necessarily productive. You know, like, Cold Card is not Bitcoin Core, right? Like, so, you know, if you want to fork our stuff and do your way, you know, you can. And we don't have to remain in consensus, right? So we have a very authoritarian view of how we want to make Cold Card, how we want to code it, how we want to the next features. And it's like, you know, you can choose to accept the way we want to do it or don't use it. I think that's pretty fair.
Or just fork it. Alrighty, though. I was like, when you get done with this Snowfather, I seriously am going to accost him about some feature proposals.
It's okay.
On there.
It's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So let's see if I can be coherent this time, Rodolfo. Okay, so you know the feature on the Cold Card where you can lock down the wallet so that it just burns the mnemonic words and only keeps the master key?
Yeah, so it's like it's the BIP32 or BIP39. BIP39, it essentially combines the passphrase and the mnemonic, and it actually derives the private key from that. The master private key, and then it deletes the mnemonic from the device. So the device only has the actual master private key.
Yeah.
Hello, sorry.
All right, no, it's fine. Okay, but pretty much what I want out of Cold Card is the ability to make a backup on an SD card of a wallet like that, where it's just gotten the master key for the passphrase wallet, and that's just like that's the base level of that backup to import. Yeah,
you already
into another
can
device.
Do that. You already can do
Wait,
that.
Wait, like seriously? Like I can, yeah. I can. Okay, then, dude. Yeah, this whole thing has just been me reading because I didn't understand that. I just want to make slave wallets for my friends and family so that they don't fuck up and lose their coins.
Yeah, no, you already can do that. So once you lock down the seed, you go into the microSD like menu and you go backup, and that's it.
Okay, awesome. I have been reeing at you for no reason for like a week or so.
I know, that's why now I just go you know, write me a BIP, Shinobi.
I mean, I'm going to eventually for this mnemonic idea, but yeah. So I next up, where's my damn OpenDime with the exposed public key, you son of a bitch?
Oh, yeah. So you've been meaning to do that. The problem is, like, the cycle of OpenDime is, like, gigantic. So we buy chips for OpenDime almost a year in advance, and then they get programmed at some point in between, like, at a secure facility, because OpenDimes are not field upgradable. So we have to program the micros before they actually go on the board. And then we do the pairing secret between the secure element and the MCU and the OpenDime after it's been assembled. So, and another problem too is that, like, you know, if we cause a bug on that thing, it's like a whole production run just goes to shit. So essentially not upgrading OpenDime is a feature in a production level. So I mean, we might do more later eventually, but we're really trying not to make any changes to it for a while.
Okay. All right. That's actually a reasonable answer. It's just, I ever since you guys invented these damn things, I've just been looking at them and just wanting to make multi-sigs out of them for like so many reasons. Just like cheap disposable multi-sig, or you could make like a one of three multi-sig, and then as
I
long
hate that
as
idea, but I'm
no no
just
no
gonna put
no
it out
just
there.
dude
I
just listen
hate
to me
it.
listen
I
to me
hate
listen to me Dude, you could do a one of three multi-sig with a three set of open dimes, and then as long as like an attacker doesn't have access to all three, they literally don't even have a way to know that that thing's
Yeah,
capable of
but
spending.
you're missing the whole other part, right? Like you're gonna have
Who
to
would
have
ever use it?
you're gonna have to like create an application or write some soft you're gonna have to write some software so that you can take a WIF format private key and sign cosign that transaction. I don't think you can even exist right now. So there's a lot of software you're gonna have to write to make that happen. So maybe once you make that software happen, then maybe we do it. Because
You
right
shouldn't
now,
have
if you
said
do
that.
that, you're not going to be able to sign it.
You shouldn't have said that, because now I'm going to do that, and you'll never hear the end of it until I get my open dimes with exposed pub keys.
I'm not making any promises, but you help make the case. See, I'm a lot more. So, for example, there is one more feature. I don't know if we ever made it public because it's not finished yet, but it was sort of like a mini side project that sort of just stayed. We're making the cold card be able to generate key pairs that are unrelated to its wallet so that you can make paper wallets or test wallets or whatever, but you get just a secure made key pair. And that might actually be more useful to you.
I like that feature, but no, I'm gonna keep screaming. I want my open dimes. But I do actually like that though. Like, 'cause you could, yeah, just generate things on the fly that you could dispose of or not have such a high degree of security around and not put like your main stash at risk. Like,
Yeah,
yeah.
like and yeah, I mean, if we can, we're gonna do BIP38 on it. I can't remember if we can or not.
Ooh.
But the idea. So, for example, like a lot of times, somebody says, like, I am from the Pineapple Fund. I'll send you 40 Bitcoins. That's almost 100% a scam, but you still want to give a correct address. You don't want to give a burn address in case somebody makes something funny, but you also don't want to dox your wallet. So, in that case, you want to just generate a key pair, I think, especially like for people who develop wallets or work in any Bitcoin development, it's so nice to get a quick key pair that that is not made on the computer. So you have some degree of trust on it, but it's also unrelated to your HODL.
I mean, that would just also be like a nice way to be able I think you're kind of fucking your own market here, Adolfo, because like now why do I need to buy an open dime to give my normie friend Bitcoin? I can just generate one of these keys with the cold card I already have and just give him
Because
that.
see, you're gonna be a thief, and you're not, and you're gonna have a copy of that private key, so your friend can never trust you.
But dude, like
The
all of my friends want me to be thieves. Like that's why I've been reeing at you about that thing that the cold card can already do, apparently. Is like I'm finally at the point where like friends are coming to me like, okay, I'm taking the plunge. Like, how do I do this shit? And
Nice. So you're gonna
it's
run
like
a long con, huh?
No, it's just like I like these are close people that I do not mind actually like helping manage their money. That's not something I would recommend you do for everybody, to any listeners out there. But like I don't want to deal with the hassle of a million different seeds. Like just give me the safe way to just all like branch off of my seed so I don't have extra shit to deal with.
I don't know if you want to do that with your R seed, but you want to might have like your friend's one that's your base seed. Maybe.
I mean, that's why like I wanted the whole lockdown thing with the cold card, because if I can lock it down with just like the master key for that on their device, like there's no way they can reverse that to any of my shit.
Yeah, no, for sure. That I don't think that's possible.
Unless Google's quantum computer comes along.
Yeah, 2 weeks. Like, it's so mind-boggling stupid. Like, it's like they got tired of VR and blockchain. Now it's like quantum is back again. Quantum computing, like, I think comes back every... It's like AI. Oh, actually, it was just AI recently, right? That we're all doomed, the world's gonna end. Mm-hmm. It's like every 6 months, you know, like, popular science needs something to talk about. It's just, it's so annoying because it's so stupid. But you know what? Every time if it does have any effect on Bitcoin price, which I don't think it does anymore, but if it does, it's great, you know, cheap coins, right?
Hear, hear. All right. So I guess I don't want one last relevant topic in my head, and I guess then we can bullshit until that peters out. But, well, what's the game plan when it comes to Liquid? Like you're kind of really slacking here in helping our Blockstream overlords, private platforms take over the world, man.
So it's really a dev time issue. So Mark III now has like enough memory for their more complex transactions. So as soon as Blockstream is willing to get a dev on it, our repo is open and we take PRs.
All right, so time to start yelling at the overlords.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we totally want to, like, Liquid Network is a fantastic thing. It really is a remarkable project. I believe, you know, essentially like securities or whatever you want to call it, however you want to see it, but the idea of tokenizing, you know, contracts, it's like it's a very important part of financialization. So, you know, we have now hard money, but with hard money you also need, like, you know, contracts that can be traded between people, and that trading has to be uncensorable, so that you can have your stable coins, you can have all that crap. It's very important. An ICO per se, right? Like whatever you want to call it, is always going to be centralized, right? Because a company is centralized. Even if you can't technically make it decentralized, it's still stupid because it is centralized, right? Like there is a set of people who can make a decision on a project, corporation, or whatever you want to see it as. What's important is the trading of those assets is done decentrally.
Yep.
Right? And that's why I like Liquid so much. The federation model provides exactly that model, right? I think Liquid really wins when, you know, all the dark markets have dark pools between them, so you can trade your dark market points between dark markets, you know, that kind of stuff. I think there is a lot that can be done, but Ethereum does have a foothold on this crap, mostly because it's been around for so long. But I think with time and money, a lot of those things will move into Liquid. And what Liquid really needs is a one-button ICO UI. So any scammer out there can press one button, put a name on it, and they can launch their scam ICO on top of Liquid. We want to bring the scams back to Bitcoin because of, you know, it's a lot of value.
Yeah.
If they're going to do it anyways, do it on top of Bitcoin.
The one thing I'm waiting for people to realize is you don't need to go through the Liquid Federation to peg Bitcoin into Liquid. But I can spool up a Liquid wallet right now, mint an asset, pull out my cold card, and I can be a way to peg into Liquid just as easily as they can. Like anybody can. All you need to do is issue an asset and handle deposits on the main chain. So it's like, yeah, that platform, like the base LBTC token is pretty locked down by the Federation, but that platform in general is absolutely not.
Yeah, I mean, what's cool is that, if you don't want to use that federation, right? The Blockstream Federation. I'm sure they'll have multiple federations eventually, but that specific one, spin up your own. You can probably even pay them to help you spin out your own. It's just really all up to you. But I think Blockstream should incentivize others competing with them so that this thing gets off the floor.
Yeah, I think, do you know Commerce Block?
No idea.
I have a few issues with some design claims they're making, but other than that, like that's another company doing stuff based on
What
elements for
is
tokens.
this thing you
He
mentioned?
said
I
no
have no.
idea.
It's just another sidechain company using elements. But their model is pretty much like every token has its own chain. And there's like no worrying about BTC peg-ins. But like I think that is gonna complement things perfectly because those tokens that want to natively have their own chain can just kind of orbit around Liquid and just go to Liquid to do any kind of wider interaction. And if you don't want that hassle, you can just natively issue it on Liquid.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, these things are not obvious to me yet. Like, I think, it's sort of going to be like different sort of setups for different people for different needs. It's nice to see others trying, right? I think it's like the more people trying this stuff, the better it is.
All right, so one more question. When is Libra support coming?
It's funny. So probably never, but I, unlike many people, I actually like Libra. I
We can't
think
be friends anymore.
I am all for, non-state actors trying to make their own money. I think that's perfectly fair and reasonable. Facebook does have a bit of a size problem. They're too big and they have too many people in it. I'm not in it. I think Facebook, like this project, has essentially the potential of teaching a whole generation that money does not have to be made by states. And that on itself is worth all the shit that's gonna come with it because it's gonna
No.
be like surveillance insanity. But it's not like you're really isn't anyways with, when you use your Venmo or whatever the fuck. So like if you use any tool already that is sort of centralized digital money is already full on surveillance. So, if Facebook wants to mess with a few sort of big monies in the world, by all means, have fun.
We can't be friends anymore.
Were we friends before?
Oh, that was fucking mean.
Boom!
That was mean.
Burn! Come on, Shinobi, just warm up to it. Who cares? People should be free to do whatever they want.
Accept stupid things. I would prefer if they don't do stupid things.
Yeah, that's a personal preference thing. People, do their thing, and hopefully they learn from their mistakes.
We're all fucked.
The world would be boring without stupid things.
Exactly. Hold my beer.
That's why we're all fucked. Alrighty. Well, I don't know.
Hey, Nopara, any cool new stuff coming out on Wasabi?
Yeah, I've been actually... I don't even want to mention it because I'm going to fail, but the proper Bitcoin Core integration, I just started working on that.
That would be nice.
Cool. Yeah. Well, hopefully we're going to have an HSM for you guys to try to use. You know, with like a... So like you can have a hot cold card for your mixing. And then maybe automatically move those E2XOs to a cold one once they've been mixed.
Yeah, you know, what I just realized is that I don't strictly need cold card support for mixing with hardware wallets, because I could just send money to a key that I just generated in memory and quickly serialize the transaction that goes back to the cold card, a signed transaction. I just don't broadcast it. So
yeah, no, that's totally
that
doable.
Memory would be on in sorry, that key would be in memory, and I could just mix it into the hardware wallet. And if the computer shuts down or anything happens, the signed transaction that goes back to the cold card is there on the hard drive or something like that. You could mess with this. I don't know, but it uses more block space, right? That's my real problem.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you could also pre-batch the transactions and then sort of sign them in the order that you need them to be signed. It's not a simple problem doing this stuff without the device being connected.
Oh, you cannot, because you don't know what transactions are going to happen, right? My point was that I send money to a key that I just generated in the memory, and I serialize the transaction that goes back to the hardware wallet.
Yes.
I just don't broadcast it.
Yes.
This is just a safety transaction. If something fucks up, if the coin join doesn't happen ever, then we can still get back the money. That's the point.
Yeah, that's pretty useful.
Woo! Also, yeah, what do you think about keeping the key in memory, in the memory of the computer, right?
You mean the private key? No, just I mean,
yeah,
just
or
the
any kind of secret, right? Because
yeah, no,
everything
you can't.
Goes
so,
through the memory.
Yeah, no, it's a clusterfuck of a stack, right? There really is no secure way of doing that. I don't think there is. I mean, yeah, so, if it's the XPub, it doesn't matter, right? Like, I mean, it just matters in terms of privacy, but that's not real security risk. But I don't think you wanna carry. Well, one is that the cold card is not gonna release the secret. It's like by design, right? So there is no way of getting the private keys out. So that wouldn't work that way.
Yeah, I mean, and anytime you are writing a password into your computer, it's gonna go through the memory, right? Anyway, it's completely outside the scope of this.
Yeah, no, totally. That's exactly like it's totally part of the issue, and that's why cold boot attacks are such a problem, right? Because you know, anyways, yeah, the computer is a disaster. It's a very complex thing, and if you just watch the net stat of a computer, is insane. I mean, any modern OS, it's like it's talking to like 50 fucking thousand like different domains, you know, every minute to even get fonts. It's like it's a clusterfuck.
Everything should be virtual machines inside virtual machines inside virtual machines.
Yeah, but the memory is still hard, so you're still screwed. That's one of the biggest issues, is that like I don't think, at least not in anything that's available to the public, that problem has been solved. In terms of, because the memory for the virtual machine is still available to the metal. So And that's often how people get side channel attacked in data centers and stuff.
Stateless hardware. Give me my stateless hardware.
Yeah, that's how the HSMs we built for CoinKite way back in the day were. They were all read-only. Once you get the keys in there, it's set up, they're read-only. Still, you know, there's still lots of risk there.
It's like, dude, you need to read this paper, Stateless Laptop. I forget who it's by. But like the entire architecture is literally like every chip on a device should be RAM, except for the read-only source that it pulls all its fucking firmware and code from. And that, yeah, that's except, everything should work.
Yeah,
like
but
that.
it doesn't work like that anymore because, you know, the microphone on the laptop is going to have a DSP chip. And the DSP chip has memory on it. And then the chip that controls the fans, you know, everything, like there's the complexity of the hardware is just mind-boggling.
It's stupid and it should stop and let's go back to stateless. Let's make everything stateless. Like stop being stupid.
Yeah. I don't think it's we can go back to that either because the complexity of the interactions make it too hard to make it stateless.
Then I'm gonna go live in the woods. Bye guys.
Exactly. You know, when hyperbeconization happens, you know, the world's gonna be falling apart too. We can all just go raise sheep.
Yeah, keep calm and use Windows.
No.
Vomit. Vomit. Oh, I was just screaming at Windows. This laser machine we got needs Windows. Oh my God, it's awful.
Yeah, no, no part is just crazy like that. So, yeah, I don't know. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about? I think I pretty much pulled us through everything I wanted to go over.
Yeah, I'm good. So I have to take down the trash.
Yep, I am. I gotta go.
All right, so Rodolfo, I'll get you my address so you can send me that free block clock, and we're all done.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
All right, so yeah, thanks for coming on again, Rodolfo. It's always fun talking to you, and I guess we'll see you next time, punks.
Later.
Bye-bye. Was there that sang it just on truth? Ain't got voice yet. Is it? Yes, it is so good.